You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Angels we have heard on high, singing sweetly through the night, and the mountains in reply, echoing their brave delight.
Welcome, everyone, to tonight's live broadcast of TPC, the Saturday evening, December the 18th, our last show before Christmas. I said our last show before Christmas. We will actually be here with you on Christmas. Next week, December the 25th, falls on a Saturday, and we'll be here, and we're really looking forward to that opportunity to be with you on such a special and spiritual day and night for our kinsmen and for our families. Speaking of families, I had the opportunity to go with mine today to this presentation that a local church was doing called The Journey to Bethlehem, where you retrace the steps from the biblical accounting of the Christmas story. And by the way, we're going to have with us again next week Pastor Brett McAtee to share with you the biblical accounting of the Christmas story. And he'll be doing that as he's done the last couple of years, and he always does a great job. That will be our last guest of the 2021 TPC broadcast calendar. Can you believe it? I'm James Edwards. Keith Alexander in the studio with me tonight. Keith, we'll give the audience a little preview of what's coming up on this, our penultimate broadcast of the year, and then our finale next week. Next week, I can tell you, we just mentioned Pastor Brett McAtee, but in addition to that, we'll be doing our annual year in review, and it has been a phenomenal year for TPC. I think a lot of the things that have happened this year, people will be surprised to revisit, or when we revisit these things next week. Some of them, when I was just sort of reading back on the archive notes and going back to January of this year, some of the things we've done, some of the things we've been a part of, some of the on-air festivities we've presented, just a really busy year, a very good year. And we'll review it all in our year in review show next week before we get to the Christmas story. And then you know what we're going to do the week after that, Keith? It'll be the first Saturday of 2022. It's actually on New Year's Day. Talk about a festive broadcasting calendar. How about a broadcast on Christmas and New Year's Day, respectively? We're going to do it all over again. We're going to do it all over again, and as we have done in each of the past 17 years, we're going to try to make year number 18 the best yet. And that's always the goal, always to get better, always to be more efficient and more impactful. And we look forward to a new year to come, but first we're going to wrap this one up in grand fashion, and it starts right now. Keith, how are you tonight, buddy?
I'm doing great, and Lord willing, we'll continue doing it for another 17.
Hey, amen to that. Amen to that. Well, I got to make a quick announcement. We had a wonderful guest lined up for tonight, but there was a family emergency, and this happens very rarely. It's a surprise it doesn't happen more. It is live radio. Somebody has to cancel at the last second. Very understandable. And we will get Trey Garrison rescheduled for TPC. You may remember Trey. He was on with us in November in his capacity as a columnist for the website National Justice, and he was helping us break down the Charlottesville trial. Did a great, great job. And when he was on the show that night, he made mention of the fact that he has written a book called Opioids for the Masses, Big Pharma's War on Middle America and the White Working Class. And we had him scheduled tonight to appear to talk about this book, and I got a call just a couple of hours ago. There was a, as, again, as I said, without going into details, a family emergency, and so we are going to get him rescheduled. But Mr. Garrison spent 9 months on the road. Listen to this, folks, primarily in the South, in Appalachia, in those towns and counties hardest hit by the opioid crisis. And he spent 9 months researching this book, talking to cops, to junkies, to drug court judges, to doctors, to pharmacists, and local residents, trying to get the story about how this opioid crisis has not just harmed people, but also families and communities. And so when we get him rebooked, and you know what, we may put him on next week. We'll talk to him this week when we regroup, and we may even work him in on the Christmas show. We'll see what his family calendar looks like.
Since we've touched on it, why don't we talk about the opioid epidemic just briefly, since we've teased the audience with it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we got about a minute or two left in this segment, and we've got a lot to talk about tonight. And one thing we're going to do tonight is we're going to do something. I think that we're going to run out of time on doing this because we're running out of showtime left this year. But as Keith is my witness here, we have a stack about yay high of, I mean, this studio is completely festooned in Christmas cards and handwritten letters and notes. They're so good, and they're so inspirational. I would be robbing you, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. and Mrs. TPC out there, if I didn't share some of these with you during this time of year. I think it would lift your spirits, and so we're going to do that in the third hour. Maybe your piece of correspondence will be read on the air. They all mean the same to us. We treasure all of them equally, even if we can't read them all live on the air. But there are some that I think, if people include their favorite scripture verses, and this is a time of year we really need to be reflective upon things like that, and community, and all of these things. And we're talking about how drugs have played a role, and this is an issue. And when we get Trey on, we'll talk about it much more. But it's an issue that we haven't focused on as much. And I said that to him last month. Very important issue, and one that we've neglected to an extent here. We're going to make amends for that. But Keith, give us a minute. Your take on that. We can't carry it on into the next segment because we've got so much. But tell us what you think, and we'll revisit with Trey. Hopefully, as early as next week, we'll get him rescheduled.
Well, the big question is, why are poor white rural Americans particularly susceptible to the misuse of opioids? I've heard several explanations. One that sounds reasonably plausible to me is that overprescribing pain medications is something that happened in the mountains due to the black lung disease that most of these fellows that worked in coal mines, which was the only basically a lucrative job that they had available to them, the type of job that they could actually support a family on, was working in the mines. And if you worked in the mines back then, they didn't have any masks back then, unlike today, with our COVID masks that we don't need. Somebody said that trying to stop COVID with a mask is like trying to stop a mosquito with a chain link fence. But back then, they didn't have that. People died of black lung disease, typically, if you worked long enough in the mines. And it was a painful death, and doctors would just overprescribe morphine and things like this for them so that they could tolerate their last few months. And then they found opioids to be the new morphine.
We got already a message coming in from listener Bill, who says, James, my hometown in Appalachia had an opioid epidemic before anyone knew what it was, but no one cares because they're poor white people. And this is something we're going to get into with Trey Garrison and to a much greater length and extent when we reschedule him. Well, that's the announcement. Let's get into the show that we had planned for you tonight. We're going to do that in the very next segment.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
People in government hate to be compared to Nazi Germany. But what is going on with the COVID vaccine is very similar to the beginning of something that happened not long ago. From 1933 to 1945, Nazi Germany carried out a campaign to cleanse German society of individuals viewed as biological threats to the nation's health. Enlisting doctors, the Nazis developed a health policy that began with mass sterilization of what they called genetically diseased persons, Jews, blacks, and gypsies. With legitimacy provided by science experts, the Nazi regime carried out a program of forced sterilization, then isolation from the rest of the German population, and finally, euthanasia, that found its most radical manifestation in the death of millions of people that were considered a national health risk. Sound familiar?
Paid for by Ammon Bundy for governor. VoteBundy.com.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The first Noel, the angel did say, was to certain poor shepherds in fields as they lay, in fields where they lay keeping their sheep.
In case we don't say it enough over the course of these last 2 weeks we have with you, ladies and gentlemen, Merry Christmas, and Merry Christmas to everyone in our listening audience. And December 16th is a special and a tragic day, a special for me personally because it's my wife's birthday, and we had a great time going out a couple of days ago. That was on Thursday, and celebrating her birthday. You know, I met her at church when she was 15 years old. We're still together and thriving, and with the three kids, and you know, we've got the Christmas card up on our website this week and on our Twitter page and all of that good stuff. And I'm just very thankful for that. But also tragic in so much as I saw this, and I of course knew the ominous history of December the 16th, but I saw something on Twitter, on a military Twitter page. On this day in 1944, that is on December 16th of 1944, 200,000 German troops backed by 1,600 guns and 350 tanks launched Hitler's last-ditch Ardennes offensive. 89,000 Americans become casualties in the Battle of the Bulge, making it the single bloodiest U.S. campaign of World War II. Now, I don't know what Ammon Bundy thinks when he hears that, but for me, it's heartbreaking. All of World War II was heartbreaking because both sides so clearly lost that war in catastrophic fashion. The very best and the most fit of European mankind were decimated, and it created a vacuum that has been filled both in Germany and in the United Kingdom and here in America, that has been filled by the weak and the timid and the apologetic. The very best, the most brave, the smartest, the strongest, they were sacrificed in this brothers' war. And to believe that every German soldier was absolute evil, and that every ally soldier was on the side of the angels, and it was a good versus evil struggle. If you believe that, you never really made it much further than public school elementary history education. It was bad for everybody, and you can even argue, I think now in hindsight, that the murderous tyranny of Joe Stalin and the communist regime and the Bolshevik regime inoculated their people behind the Iron Curtain, that murderous tyranny was actually less damaging than what liberal democracy has made of the of Western Europe and of America. And of course, we have interviewed a former German soldier who was a Christian, who was a good man by all accounts. He suffered in a Soviet POW camp after the war, and he wrote a book about it called Another Bowl of Kapusta. It's just tragic, and there's just no way you can look at Germany today and America today and the UK of today and France of today and say, you know what, thank God it turned out the way it did. The way it turned out was very, very bad for each and every one of the belligerent nations.
Well, I remember seeing some years ago a picture of Detroit in 1945 and Hiroshima in 1945, and those were contrasted with pictures of Detroit, Michigan today and Hiroshima today, and the caption underneath the two contrasting sets of photographs was, tell me again, who was it that won the war and who was it that lost? Basically, Hiroshima, Japan now is a gleaming city because Japan is racially intact and is nationalistic in its foreign policy and domestic policy. The United States, emblemized by Detroit, has gone into a serious downspin, a tailspin, since World War II because of the triumph of liberalism. World Wars I and World War II were disasters because they pitted both sides, white Gentile nations, against one another. And again, who benefited the most from it? Jewish power and influence. Look at World War II, the Nuremberg trials. Why was international Jewry so dead set against Adolf Hitler? They were against him because in 1933, he threw the Rothschilds out of their controlling position in the central bank of Germany and ran it himself. He said, rather than letting them just print up money for their benefit, we're going to take it over and print off money for the benefit of the German people. And he used that money to pay Germans to work on internal improvements like the Autobahn system. And as a result, by 1936, Germany under Adolf Hitler had totally recovered from the Depression, the first nation to do so and the only nation that did so without getting into World War II. Now, Ernest Hemingway had a very interesting quotation that I would like to, is brought to mind by this. He said that inflation is the first remedy and war is the second remedy for failing nations economically. And he said, they bring temporary relief, but ultimately they bring ruin to the nation. That's what has happened to the United
States.
Well,
and that is exactly, you know, I was just reading about our inflation now being at near historic or at least historic with in terms of the last half a century, certainly, but historic in many ways if you just factor it all in. And they said that the Great Depression didn't end until America's entries into World War II.
Well, that's the only way that Britain or France or America got out. But on the other hand, the so-called militaristic maniac, Hitler, got his nation out during peacetime. And he was going to be punished by world Jewry for the unpardonable sin of driving the Jewish bankers out of their controlling position in his economy. The world Jewry could not have allowed that to go unchallenged. If that happened, then other countries would learn from it, and the game would be over for Jewish banking interests.
Well, and here's the thing.
Which is the way that they control the world at the present time.
You cannot have an adult conversation about this topic without immediately being met with the shrieking of "you're a neo-Nazi, you're this, you're that,
you're
the
an
other
anti-Semite, you're
yeah,
this.
You're you want to kill 6 million Jews if you can have an adult conversation without going back to the war propaganda." And just reciting that as if it's God's holy word. Well, it's not. War is hell. I'm sure the Germans did some very bad things as well, as all people do in war. But you think we were innocent?
Even Donald Trump said that. Remember, he said, you know, we don't have any murderers, you know, among us, when they were talking about the Russians and how bad the Russians were under Putin. You know.
Oh, look,
let's say everybody wake up and smell the coffee. We have a fallen world that we live in, but the results of World War I and World War II was the decimation of the white Gentile populations of the world. And because of that, they used to be 25% of the world's population. Now they're less than 10% and going down every year. And you can see the anti-white Gentile animus in everything. For example, Edmund Connolly wrote a wonderful article that first went in the UNS Review and then was in the Occidental Observer about the displacement of whites in entertainment, in TV shows, in movies, and also in advertising. And see, that is just, you know, where is that all coming from? It's coming from the same place that World War One and World War Two came from.
And by the way, the Germans got their eugenics policies, many of which were good, from the United States and from the UK. This is our friend Rick in Brooklyn texting us as he listens to us live. All of that's true. And I don't believe all the propaganda. I don't. I don't believe Hitler wanted to conquer the world and liquidate Christianity.
His program was Ein Volk.
And I'll tell you who doesn't believe it either is Pat Buchanan, and we'll talk about that interview that we had with Pat on the topic next.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The Senate is adjourned for the holidays without taking action on President Biden's Build Back Better plan. Senators wrapping up work early Saturday morning after a rare overnight session without reaching a final agreement on the bill. No votes are scheduled over the holidays on Biden's social spending package or voting rights legislation. The White House has indicated the president wants to see the spending bill move forward in January. With COVID-19 surging again around the United States, leaders across the country have to decide whether or not to shut down or put new restrictions in place. Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts explains what his state is doing as cases rise.
Help them keep their businesses open. Give them the tools so they can keep people healthy, but allow them also to get back to a more and more normal life.
USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Alaroot. I want to tell you about my friends at Tangible Investments. Tangible is among the biggest precious metals and rare coin dealers in America. 35 years in business, billions in sales. They sold one rare coin collection for $15 million, the largest private sale in history at the time. They've been awarded the PNG designation. That means they're the best of the best in the world. But here's the big advantage for you. Tangible might just have the lowest overhead of any precious metals dealers. That means they can afford to give you incredible deals. Tangible will sell you gold at 1% over the New York spot price. Just 1% over the New York spot price? Who does that? No one ever. Just say Root. That's it. You get your gold at a price no one in America can match. This offer is limited to 5 ounces per family. Get started by contacting Tangible Investments at 800-300-8441. That's toll free, 800-300-8441. Be sure to say Root, 800-300-8441, or online at TII1.com.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is continuing his tour Saturday through the areas in Kentucky which were devastated by last weekend's tornadoes. McConnell saying that there is a looming economic reality that municipalities are facing as they attempt to recover and rebuild.
After this first period of 30 days where the federal government picks up the entire cost of the cleanup, you get into a much more challenging period. How do you build back? How do you pay for it?
Kroger is eliminating some COVID-19 benefits for unvaccinated employees beginning next year. This comes as the grocery store chain is pushing to get more workers vaccinated as concerns over the Omicron variant rise. Kroger will stop providing unpaid COVID leave for unvaccinated employees and will set a $50 a month surcharge to non-union salary workers who haven't received the shots. This is USA Radio News.
I know you think that's "What Child Is This?" And it is. That is a beautiful classic Christmas carol. But before it was that, and we learned this just this year, earlier this year during our March Around the World series when we were focusing on the UK, that was "Greensleeves" by Henry VIII. Yes, the Henry VIII.
A traditional English tune that many hymns are set to.
That's right. And they took the music that Henry VIII wrote, if you point that at me, that echoes, and repurposed it and added lyrics to many other songs, including "What Child Is This?" So look, that's another thing I'm looking forward to already next year, is getting back to our March Around the World series. And that's not too far away, but we don't want to look ahead too quickly and look past Christmas, which is next week. And of course, we're talking about it tonight as well. But just very quickly on this, the Battle of the Bulge, the anniversary of that, obviously both sides lost that war. I would tell you who won that war, but I think you already know. And Pat Buchanan, you know, we had Pat Buchanan on this show to talk about his book, Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War. I mean, truly, Churchill was a maniac, and he had a bloodlust, and he wouldn't even consider peace. He wouldn't even entertain the idea of peace. Which
he
of course,
hid the Hitler peace plan after Dunkirk from the English people. That's why Adolf Hitler parachuted Rudolf Hess into Scotland to try to get past the news embargo that was being waged by the British media against any report of Hitler's efforts to make peace with England. He said, "I don't want any of your land. I don't want to fight you. Everything, basically, will help you defend your colonies even." But, of course, it was Churchill who wanted the war. He's the one who started the war, not Hitler. Germany did not declare war on England and France. England and France declared war on Germany. And
because of an asinine treaty, I mean, basically Germany got raped after World War One at Versailles. I don't want to spend too much time on this. We don't have enough time to spend on it, and that's not the purpose.
Well, you know, guess what? We've got an hour now.
I get it, but I mean, I don't want to get mired down in this because it's just you can't win this one. But yes,
well,
I mean,
well,
we know
good for
all
people
of that.
To hear the real history.
That's true, and all of that's true. There was actually a movie that I watched this week called The Darkest Hour, and of course, in this movie, which was excellently acted, it was excellently cast. Gary Oldman convincingly plays War Crimes Churchill, as I like to call him.
War Criminal Churchill.
It was a well-acted movie, even if you don't necessarily can agree with all of the premise. But this does lead me, though, to something that we would like to make mention of at this time. This goes back to World War One. And that is the Christmas Truce, and that was that series of widespread but unofficial ceasefires along the Western Front right around this week in 1914, in the week leading up to the holiday. German and French and British soldiers crossed trenches to exchange Christmas greetings and talk, and in areas, men from both sides ventured into no man's land. I mean, imagine that in the heat of battle on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day to mingle and exchange food and souvenirs, and there were even joint burial ceremonies and prisoner swaps, while several meetings ended in carol singing. I know that they sang it. It is said they sang Silent Night. Men played football games with one another, giving one of the most enduring images of the truce, and you see, there's even a photograph of British and German soldiers arm in arm exchanging headgear. There's a movie made about it, Joey Noel, And so, you know, I think at Christmas we need to pray that our people, of course, at this point with our demographics in our Western nations being what they are, we have to pray that our people never again go to war against one another. No more brothers' wars. But you could do that in 1914, Keith, because we remembered that we were all one people. At the end of the day, we were all one people. So you could have, you would never have such a scene anymore, because our nations have forgotten who they are and they've forgotten their roots. And again,
well, we've been changed demographically. And what you're talking about, though, basically, white Gentiles can't, like white Southerners and black Southerners, get along unless there is a third-party provocateur picking the scab off of every wound, trying to whip people into inconsolable frenzies. And, of course, that's our old friend World Jewry again that did that in World War One. Now, let's visit, because I think it's pertinent to what's happening now in foreign relations. How did World War One start? World War One started with the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. Austria-Hungary basically wanted Serbia. Serbia, I don't know if they had actually gotten their independence yet, but they were trying to break away, like most of the lands that had previously been part of the Ottoman Empire in the Balkans. Well, Russia had portrayed itself as the protectors of all Slavic people, like the people in the Balkans. So, after the assassination of the Archduke of Austria-Hungary, Austria-Hungary invaded Serbia. Well, Serbia sent out an SOS to Russia, and Russia, because they had a treaty with Serbia saying that they would come to their defense if they were attacked, got involved in attacking Austria-Hungary because they had attacked Serbia. Well, then Germany had a similar treaty with Austria-Hungary that said that if they were attacked, Austria-Hungary, Germany would come to their aid. So that's where all of that happened, okay? And then Churchill got England involved by trying to script back to, first of all, France was still smarting from the results of the Franco-Prussian War in 1871, which in the aftermath led to the creation of the German nation. Well, they wanted to get back Alsace-Lorraine and some other places in that had formerly been part of France that had become part of Germany as a result of the peace treaty for the Franco-Prussian War. So they came in and got involved in that. And then Britain got involved through an obscure treaty from the Napoleonic era that said that if Belgium was invaded, England would come to their rescue. And see, this is what George Washington warned us about with entangling alliances. He said, avoid entangling alliances and favorite nation status with any foreign nation and with foreign wars. And, of course, America has blithely ignored that since Jewish power and influence became a big part of our foreign policy apparatus in America. Now, we see ourselves on the verge of another potential war involving NATO. NATO doesn't extend to Ukraine, but America has been trying to extend NATO status to lands and nations that used to be part of the Soviet Union, like the Ukraine. Well, basically what Putin has said is, you've got to have hands off of Ukraine and tell me that we're never going to allow them to be part of NATO, and if you don't do that, I'm going to take care of Russia's interests ourselves and invade. This could be the start of another world war, folks, and it's because of the same reasons that got us into World War One. And World War Two is basically a resumption of the hostilities of World War.
Well, and of course,
World War II was a resumption of the hostilities of World War I.
Involving the rape at Versailles and everything else. I mean, there's just no way to give a cause and effect of the world wars in two segments of radio. You couldn't do it in a full month. Of course, the war guarantee, that's ostensibly something that caused Europe to go to war with itself, but that wasn't the real reason. And let's just get to this. I mean, what did Patton say at the end of the war? I mean, this is General George Patton.
Yeah, General Patton said that we fought the wrong people. He said we shouldn't have been fighting the Germans. We should have been fighting the Russians, and we should have been fighting the Russians because they were controlled by the Jews.
And I agree with Patton on that. And again, you just look at it. We bring this up. We brought this up before. Just the Battle of Stalingrad, a million of the, you know, people that could have, we could have colonized Mars by now if we'd have striven – for excellence.
If we could have saved all the lives lost in World Wars I and II, white people that died needlessly in those wars, then, like you said, the world was the sky was the limit for what could have been accomplished. Instead, ironically,
we went after
England
equality
was,
instead of excellence.
Well, see, Churchill wanted to preserve England's primacy among European nations. Unfortunately and ironically, because of his insistence on involving Britain in both World Wars I and World War II, England became, rather than the primary or the primal nation of Europe, the cottage by the sea. By the Suez Incident in the mid-1950s, basically England had to admit the old gray mare ain't what she used to be. We're no longer a primary nation, and we've got to ask America and others for help. They need to carry on the mantle because we're no longer capable of being the primary nation of the so-called free world.
Oh, we lost the war. There's no doubt about it. Germany lost it. We lost it. Every white nation lost it, except for maybe Russia, but that was it's certainly inadvertent how it worked out for them.
Well, Russia,
we got to take a break. Got to take a break.
But
we'll
Jews
be back.
Were in charge of Russia.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Decades after Jimmy Carter, Joe Biden picked up where he left off. With America surrendering to terrorists, Biden's foolish spending is causing inflation, which means more pain at the pump, higher prices on groceries, devaluing your retirement savings when you need it most. Once was a mistake. Twice is a disaster. America needs strong leaders, not weak ones. Save America JFC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
How many times do I have to tell you?
I swear, it just goes in one ear and out the other.
Don't you understand English?
Your children are probably too polite to tell you.
Hello, those things on the side of your head aren't turnips.
But they get just as frustrated when you won't listen to them as you do when they won't listen to you.
Do I need to speak slower?
In fact, few things show children how much they're valued and respected more than a parent's willingness to listen.
Tell me what you did at work today.
Studies show when parents listen, children develop better listening skills themselves. They also tend to have more self-confidence and are more likely to avoid alcohol and drugs.
Now sit down here and tell me all about it.
When you really listen, love is what they'll hear.
Thank you for sharing that with me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march, that is why we pray, and that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. From God our Heavenly Father, blessed angel came, And unto certain shepherds brought tidings of the same, how that in Bethlehem was born the Son of God by name. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
I really did not intend to spend the two segments on World War II, but I did want to make mention of the fact of the Battle of the Bulge and how it is a fact that every Western nation lost that war, every European nation lost that war.
Well, you know, my father won a Bronze Star in the... I didn't know that until after his death, I checked his military record, and he had a Bronze Star for meritorious conduct in combat Battle of the Bulge.
Well, and look, and it doesn't take away the valor of those people. It took a hell of a lot of bravery to get off those boats at Normandy, but it's just I can't for the life of me figure out what they were fighting for or against, really, as it all played out. I understand what they were told they were fighting against. But here's the thing. So, of course, we all know what atrocities have been attributed to the Germans of that era. We all know that. It's drilled into us every single day. But we're the good guys. We've aborted over 60 million of our own babies. We murder our own children out of the sake of convenience. But we're the good guys. We firebombed a defenseless population in Dresden. We're the good guys. We dropped atomic bombs on defenseless Japanese. We're the good guys, man, woman, and child. We're the good guys. We murder our own children. But they're the bad guys. Okay, yeah, I got you. But speaking of abortion, Keith, that actually brings us up to something that you have a pretty good take on. We were going to cover this last week and forgot about it. I'll try to find the name of it, but the name's not important. What it is what is important.
It's from Mississippi. It's a challenge to a Mississippi legislative statute that was passed by the Mississippi legislature that basically prohibits abortion after 15 weeks after gestation. It has to be in that window between conception and 15 weeks of age. And if it is later than that, it's against the law and can be prosecuted as a crime.
Now, what your take on this was interesting, I thought. And I said, yeah, we should probably do a couple of minutes on that. So what it was is the riot is excited thinking that the cucks on the Supreme Court. When's the last time the American people won a Supreme Court case? I can't think of one, certainly not in my lifetime, and I don't think these people are going to be any different. But they're thinking that they're going to overturn and outlaw Roe versus Wade, and they're wrong about that. The left is thinking that this is just some catastrophe that's going to take away the God-given right of a woman to murder her child. And they're wrong about that. And you're thinking that the Supreme Court's going to tightrope this thing in a way that doesn't really change anything.
Well, it really won't be tightroping because you need to understand that basically criminal statutes are, by and large, creatures of state law, including laws regulating abortion. Before Roe versus Wade, most of the states of the United States prohibited abortion. It was a crime, pure and simple. It wasn't the same as murder. You didn't get the electric chair for having an abortion or participating in an abortion. But it was a substantial crime, okay? It wasn't just a misdemeanor in most jurisdictions. But it might have been a minor felony. But now, if you were to reverse Roe versus Wade, basically, Roe versus Wade said there is a federal constitutional provision that guarantees a woman the right to have an abortion. Well, reverse that. There's no federal constitutional provision doing that. It was dishonest judicial decision-making that set it in the first place. But what that would do is kick it back to the states, and I guarantee almost all the blue states for sure are going to maintain no penalty for an abortion. Red states will have some penalties or they'll have some restrictions. You know, what else is going to happen? I don't know. This is going to exacerbate the red state, blue state divide, which basically has everyone in the nation, both in blue states and in red states, talking seriously about secession now. And that's something that, you know, for example, Brad Griffin, who is the head of the website Occidental Dissent, has reported on in great length. You can go to his website right now and read several articles about secession. We need to congratulate our friend Michael Hill in the League of the South. They were telling us years ago that secession was not an oddball idea. It's really an idea whose idea, whose time had come. Well, guess what? Michael Hill was right.
Right, whose time happening. Is ahead of it again.
Yeah,
yes.
Right, well. Again. So, you know, but on the other hand, reversing Roe versus Wade just means that that will be a repudiation. There is a federal constitutional right to an abortion. On the other hand, will that outlaw abortions everywhere? Probably not. In fact, I could say almost assuredly not.
I could almost assuredly tell you that all of these so-called conservatives who champion these social issues, and this isn't even my biggest issue. Immigration may be my biggest issue. There's a lot of things that I would put ahead of abortion if I, in terms of problems that need to be solved first. Abortion is an issue, and you wouldn't want that. You certainly wouldn't want that in a classic, you know, legacy America and homogenous America, a Christian America. It'd be anathema. But I don't see Barrett or any of these other charlatans holding the line, even on this, their most signature of issues. I could see them basically giving the left a victory, like the Supreme Court always does.
Well, Amy Coney Barrett, I think, is a one-trick pony.
Well, this is her trick. If she don't deliver on this.
And abortion is supposed to be that trick. And I guess what you're saying, and I don't doubt this a bit, when all is said and done, more will be said than done by Amy Coney Barrett on the issue of abortion. She may come through and vote to uphold the Mississippi law, but she's been utterly worthless on every other conservative versus liberal case that has come before the Supreme Court during her tenure. We'll see what she does, but neither she nor really, you only have two solid votes, Alito and Thomas, Clarence Thomas, for true conservatism. The rest of the people on that Supreme Court are squishy at best, and some of them are downright wild-eyed radical Bolsheviks like, you know, Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan, people like that.
Well, yeah, I got to get one more shot in on who were the good guys and who were the bad guys in the Brothers' Wars. We forget that Comrade Stalin was a good guy. His the Jewish Bolsheviks of the Soviet era killed tens of millions of more white Christians than were ever attributed to the Nazis, and even the most inflated of numbers.
36 million white Russians and Ruthenians died between World War I and World War II in gulags and in the Holodomor, the enforced starvation of Ukrainians. That's forgotten about. And see, it lives to this day. Whenever the news media wants to describe or vilify a government that they think is tyrannical and authoritarian, they're always Nazis. Why not commies? Well, that's because commies equals Jew. That's what happened in.
That's
what happened in the U.S.
And it's true, and certainly they're certainly leftists. They are that, and they were certainly that in Russia. There's no doubt they were.
Communism was a Jewish invention.
Okay, that's,
Marx
that's
and
all
were
true.
Not Southern Baptists or Russian Orthodox.
That's true. It's either left and or Jew and or left.
And why do you think there was such a pushback by Hollywood about the communist in Hollywood, the communists in the State Department thing? Because they knew that when they started punishing communists, they were going to be predominantly and almost exclusively punishing Jews. They were the people in Hollywood and in the State Department that were the communists.
I shouldn't have gotten back on this, but I couldn't help it. I had to say it. But yes, but in terms of the sheer body count, they made the Nazis, even if you believe everything that was ever attributed to the Nazis, you take it all. They made them look like the B-League team. They made them look
they're the junior varsity at the best, okay? The real varsity in the world champions, undisputed, were the commies.
One more thing, Keith. I don't want to get back to court because we spent all of November in court, but it took 3 weeks for the lawfare that we saw in Charlottesville to be reanimated, and now one of the same organizations that had a hand in the Charlottesville show trial are now slapping, pun intended, the January 6 organizers with some of the same civil litigation that we just saw. It worked.
Well, look, warfare is warfare by litigation. Now, we've had that since Brown versus Board of Education, really since Shelley versus Kramer and Sweat versus Painter. Shelley versus Kramer was really an important decision. That's the one that said you can't have restrictive covenants and deeds that say that you can't transfer the your house or your lot to somebody of, let's say, the black race. That's what you had before, and that's what kept neighborhoods stable. Think of all the money that has been lost. What happened as a result of doing away with restrictive covenants? Well, what happened was block busting. Like, there's a neighborhood in Memphis called Glenview Heights that went from all white to all black in 6 months when surreptitiously a bunch of Jewish realtors bought some houses and put black people in there and caused a stampede of for sale signs to pop up. And it didn't take 6 months for them to basically change the whole character of that neighborhood from all white to virtually all black. And because of that, think of the money that white people have lost, that plus the money they've lost sending their kids to private schools because of Brown versus Board of Education. And who is behind it all? The usual suspects.
All right, we're going to do something. I'm going to shuffle the cards a little bit. I'll tell you what I got in mind when we come back. And I'll tell you how Keith just triggered me to do this when we come back. Stay tuned.